Are you a nonprofit professional who's feeling overwhelmed and burnt out? Well, welcome to the Lead with Heart podcast. I am your host, Haley Cooper. On this podcast, we will share stories of leadership, courage, and empathy that'll help you learn to take care of yourself, your staff, organization, and community. You will hear from nonprofit leaders who have been in your shoes and have learned best practices to raise more revenue and make a greater impact. Let's thrive together.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Lead with Heart podcast. This is your host, Haley Cooper, and I'm super honored today to have Kristen Harrington on the podcast. We have known each other over LinkedIn, and we also met in person last year in Washington, D.C., and she's actually the one that helped me get my first consulting client. So I'm super thankful for her and thankful that we get to talk about all things leadership today. So thank you, Kristen, for being here.
Oh, thanks for having me. It's so exciting.
So I would love to know a little bit more about your background and how did you get into become a leadership and strategy advisor for nonprofits?
Oh, man. So probably much like other pathways or other people who are listening to the podcast, I went to college with one plan in mind and then the recession and just a last minute freak out over the path I was headed down, notably to be Clarice Starling from Silence of the Lambs, which is insanely creepy, but that was my career goal at the time. I had to pivot pretty last minute. And as I mentioned, it was 2007, 2008, the recession was just about to hit in a big way. The job market was terrible. And so I took an opportunity that was there, really candidly. And I went into National Service Corps called Teach for America, part of the AmeriCorps umbrella, and was really fortunate to spend some time on the south side of Chicago and then in Gary, Indiana, serving and supporting our youngest learners, kindergartners. While it was a joyful experience in many respects, my calling is not to be with small children in a classroom. And I became very aware of that very quickly. So I spent a couple of years and then pivoted. Still a pretty dire job market. My husband and I were struggling to find our footing. And much to our dislike at the time, my parents had some local connections back in our hometown in Michigan. And we said, okay, I guess we'll put our big city dreams on hold and move back home. And that started it. I landed into a frontline role within the workforce system within Michigan, within a nonprofit that was quite innovative at the time. And I was fortunate. The leader there gave me a lot of tremendous opportunities to move quickly through the organization and to gain leadership experience pretty rapidly, leading to starting a nonprofit that was statewide and had a lot of success. And then ultimately pivoting into consulting, where I was able to support lots of nonprofits nationally, regionally, state level, and local. All of that led me to my current career with LeadStar. Love to talk about that more. We are not specific to the nonprofit sector, but nonprofits will always have my heart because it's a sector I've served in for all of my career.
Well, thank you so much for giving us a little bit more about your background. And you mentioned that there was this organization that helped with upward mobility and really helping you with your leadership experience. And I think specifically when it comes to nonprofits, there's high turnover, because there's that lack of upward mobility and that lack of professional development or investing in people as to become leaders. So what were some of the qualities that leader instilled in you to be able to pass that on to others?
I respected the fact that he, despite it being a regional nonprofit, he never viewed it that way, right? From that lens. It was always a bigger lens of where can we connect and how can we look for relationship building or new opportunities or people investments? So much so that I was able to connect with leaders that were like pinch me moments every time. And I know we talked about that before the podcast started, spending 5+ years with the McChrystal Group out of Alexandria, Virginia, and General Stanley McChrystal, the 4-star general who led the attack against the Al-Qaeda network at JSOC. So this just tremendous military leader and his entire team of consultants. I spent a lot of time there, which was fantastic. And then I was connected to my colleagues now at LeadStar and was able to work in such a close capacity to two female Marine officers who had then pivoted into the private sector and done these huge things with companies like Facebook and FedEx, and being coached and mentored and supported by these leaders. Small town Kristen could have never dreamed of that on my own. And so I credit that leader, that nonprofit, for giving me those opportunities.
Wow, that's amazing. And I think it's so important to receive that coaching and that mentoring, especially if you're entering into a role or if you are at the top. We constantly need to learn and have someone to bounce ideas off of. And you also mentioned this idea of innovation. And I know that from your bio, you've helped organizations scale existing programs to have a further program reach. So how have you worked with organizations or coached leaders on viewing their organizations as an opportunity to innovate and scale?
I think if we're talking about nonprofits specifically in the sector, there's been such a tendency or a habit to say, we've got to get our funders. We just got to keep going back to that same well over and over again. And the reality is, not that there aren't funders out there, but that funding landscape has shifted. And you do sometimes have to think new and differently about how you approach revenue generation more broadly. And so I've been able to work with a number of organizations in thinking about that question of innovation, coupled in with how do you generate revenue, because that's so significant to nonprofits. And for example, starting new service lines that build from their existing portfolio of work are all tied into the mission, but actually drive revenue in ways that become sustainable. And so I think that type of innovation is really interesting to me.
Yeah. And going a little bit further on that, so when there are funding opportunities, it's so easy to say, oh, I want to jump on this, but it doesn't necessarily align with the mission. So how do you coach nonprofit leaders to innovate, start those services while keeping the mission at the forefront of every decision that they make?
Yeah. And so I think the biggest disservice, or one of the biggest disservices we do to nonprofits in the nonprofit sector, is we treat them as if nothing from the private sector applies. And so I really like to pull in what's typically private sector doctrine. People like Jim Collins, who speak on this issue to private sector leaders, to say things like the hedgehog concept still apply to the nonprofit sector and nonprofit leaders, right? So what are you passionate about? Met with what are you best at, better than anybody in the world? Met with what really drives your resource engine in a focused way. And if you can get to the very center of that circle and stay there with commitment and intense focus, I don't think you see that mission drift that's so common with nonprofits and so easy to do.
Can you talk a little bit more about the hedgehog concept? I've never heard of that before.
Oh, yeah. So Jim Collins popularized it in his book, Good to Great. He actually did an adaptation called Good to Great in the social sectors. And it's a quick read. It's super easy information to just take in quickly. But the concepts are hard, right? Like, we can sit here and say, oh yeah, just do it with focus. Just stay in your mission. But the reality is that funder comes to you and they say, hey, I've got X dollars to do this, but it requires you to shift into this space. Which leaders are willing to say no, right? Especially if it's a funder that they depend on in some capacity. Or what often happens is you'll have somebody that starts with a particular issue, starts a nonprofit around an issue. So let's say they start as a food bank and they're meeting the needs of individuals within the community who are hungry. Well, over time, you start to go down to the root cause of some of that food insecurity and you realize, hey, maybe it's housing. Maybe it's really stuff like transportation. Oh, wait, maybe it's workforce development, right? This person doesn't have a job and so they can't access food on their own. And then you keep trying to serve the problem, but oh, wait, what happens to the food insecurity, right? What happens to what you set out to do to begin with? And so Jim Collins is really talking about staying in the center, again, of what you're passionate about, what you're best at, met with the resources that can drive those things. And in many respects, to me, that kind of brings in the mission at the center and just being willing to say no to anything that falls outside of that.
Yeah, that totally makes sense. And I love the example that you gave. And I attended a equity summit back in October, and there was our keynote speaker talks about futurism. And one of the things that stood out to me in her book was that it's called Future for Good. And I think a lot of nonprofits have this hard time of thinking about the future. We're so reactive and we're reacting to the problem. And we're always talking about the same problem, but not focusing on the actual solution to the problem. We get so stuck in complaining about problem after problem. And it gets into this cycle that we're not able to think about the future because we're so reacting to that problem. So how do you coach, if you do, leaders to get out of that, I got to solve this problem today, and start thinking about the future solution and bringing a solution-oriented mindset to the table?
I think if you are a nonprofit leader and you're feeling singled out in some way by that, this is across the board, right? I call it firefighting versus fireproofing. There is such a natural human tendency to want to react to the things that are in front of us, address it, check it off our list, and then go on to the next thing. There's like a satisfaction to it. And typically it happens within the confines of a day or in the confines of a few days. And so it becomes, and I don't want to, I don't mean this offensively, but in some ways it becomes the easy thing to do. It's the thing that's right there. And so why not just do it? And so you fill your calendar with all of these meetings and all of these fires that you have to react to. And that becomes your week after week. And so we encourage leaders, whether it's nonprofit, private sector, or anyone, to build as much white space as possible into their calendar. And if you're not familiar with the white space term, it really means hold intentional time where you challenge yourself to do nothing but think about the future, just like you're talking about, Haley, right? Set aside that intentional time, go for a walk, jump in the shower, because those ideas come to you in those moments where you're not overloaded with tons of stuff, right? And if you can hold that time on your calendar, as hard as it is, and break that cycle of feeling like you're getting a ton done because you're reacting to all these fires, and instead start fireproofing the organization, thinking about the future, it can really go a long way.
Ooh, I love that concept. And you're bringing so many good concepts today, fireproofing instead of firefighting. And I think when it comes along those lines, a lot of organizations, again, I don't mean to put down nonprofits, but how can, like, in terms of fireproofing, also build in succession planning? I've had organizations reach out to me and say, oh, well, I'm a founder, I've been the CEO for a number of years, I'm going to sunset my career. Now I have to start succession planning when it should have been built in from the beginning. So in terms of that long-term thinking, how can nonprofits begin to build in this idea of succession planning?
Yeah, I think succession planning is just one piece of a people investment strategy, right? Or a people-focused strategy. To your points earlier, you have to be every bit as mindful of the people you're serving and supporting that are employed within your own organization as you are of the people you're serving and supporting outside the organization, right? That are in alignment with your mission. Because if there isn't strong health within the organization, odds are high your mission's not going very far, right? Any organization, writ large, but nonprofits no exception, where the culture itself is in a bad place, the mission's not doing that great, right? And so you can see that. And I think succession planning is one piece that ties into your comments earlier around upward mobility, right? If we are creating these pathways for people within our organizations to move effectively, then we should also be thinking about who are they succeeding when future opportunities come open. And that goes all the way up to the highest level. I've seen succession plans really successfully executed in the nonprofit sector. And it's done with a tremendous amount of intentionality with a very long-term focus. To your point, like a successful transition typically takes 3+ years to really move the person to a point where they're ready to take the helm.
Yeah. And I love that idea. You are singing my language about that human-centered, people-centered vision. You have to carry out your mission internally just as much as you do externally. Same with your values. And when you're talking about culture, can you define, everyone has a different definition of culture, and we've talked a lot about it on this podcast, but I would love to know, what's your definition of culture in an organization?
Oh man, that's a great question. And to your point, I throw it out there a lot and haven't thought as deeply as I should have about it, admittedly. So I would describe it as the way the organization feels to the people who are in it. And the sense of belonging that people experience around an organization.
Yeah, I think that's a great definition. And how can, or we talk also a lot on this podcast, and I love it because everyone has different perspectives and we could be doing the same work, but in a different way. And we talk a lot about building that culture of belonging and psychological safety where people feel like they can show up as themselves and be able to do their work. Because if you invest in that first, you're going to become better stewards of the money that is given to you. Because your people stick around, there's higher productivity, and you're actually delivering on your mission. So what have you found some of the characteristics of leaders who are able to really implement this idea of building a culture of belonging? Hey there, podcast family. If you're like me and deeply committed to improving your leadership skills and fostering better connections with your team, I've got something truly amazing to share with you. I'm proud to introduce the EMC Masterclass, something I talk about often as a certified trainer. It's an incredible program developed by the renowned Dr. Lola Gershfeld, an organizational psychologist and corporate emotional connection expert. You might remember her from a podcast episode where she shared invaluable insights into the world of emotional connection. Dr. Gershfeld's EMC Leaders courses are designed for anyone working with people, whether you're a manager, supervisor, team leader, educator, coach, mentor, or a team member. This program is truly for everyone looking to enhance their communication and collaboration skills to raise more revenue for their mission. Now, let me tell you why the EMC Masterclass is a game changer. Dr. Gershfeld's groundbreaking emotional connection process has been integrated into top universities' curriculum and recognized by international organizations like ICF, HRCI, and SHRM. Humans are wired to seek emotional safety, and when we feel safe, we're more likely to take risks, share innovative ideas, and collaborate effectively. The EMC process is the catalyst for creating that emotional safety within your team. The virtual EMC Masterclass consists of 8 modules with 4 hours of expertly recorded material, 13 quizzes to reinforce your learning, and a workbook filled with activities for offline practice and something I still refer to daily. Ready to become an emotional connection master? Dr. Gershfeld is offering an exclusive deal for our podcast listeners. Use the code LEADWITHHEART to enjoy a generous 10% discount on the EMC Masterclass. Head over to emcleaders.com and enroll in the EMC Masterclass today.
So I'm going to take your question, turn it a little bit, just to bring up some of my own experience in the negative, actually. So I believe that the definition of leadership is inspiring others and influencing outcomes. I think if you're inspiring and you're influencing, you're leading. Well, when I got into some of my earliest leadership roles, I was pretty young, right? Probably too young, definitely too inexperienced to lead the number of people that I was leading across many teams, right? 60 or 70 people in my early 20s, which it was a turnaround situation. Many of the teams were struggling with performance, just I was brought in many ways because I was a really outcomes-driven leader. Well, I would suggest that I was a bit too outcomes-driven coming into that role. So much so that I stayed focused on the performance outcomes really squarely, but almost totally ignored the inspiration side of it, the people that drive those outcomes. And I can tell you from that experience and others like it, unfortunately, because I didn't just learn that lesson then. It took a lot longer. You can get these short-term outcomes, or you can move the needle a bit. But if you build a culture that alienates your team members, doesn't address their psychological safety, doesn't make them feel connected or a sense of belonging. Over time, that's not sustainable. The outcomes will slip, your retention will be awful, and ultimately, you're not really going to make any progress towards your mission. And I say that as someone who did all the wrong things and who regrets a lot of my experience, to maybe save some of you who are listening a chance to do it better.
Well, thank you so much for being so vulnerable and honest about your own experience. And I think a lot of people can relate to that, where we focus on the outcomes and delivering that. I think that's normal. And a lot of people experience that. So thank you for sharing. And when you're talking about outcomes, and there is a time and a place for that, obviously, we all have metrics we need to meet. I'm a fundraiser at heart. I know I have to meet dollar goals, and I can get so focused on all of that. But I think something that I've been thinking about a lot is we, especially in terms of like fundraising or strategic plans, and we've talked about this again on the podcast, like we do it and then we tell people what they're supposed to do without getting the buy-in and belonging. So as a strategy advisor, how do you go about getting the buy-in and belonging from people in the organization to then be able to carry out that strategy?
Well, people always ask, when do I involve people in the process? And I always say, without fail, the sooner the better, the more the merrier. And as a strategy advisor who is responsible for herding all of these cats around the more the merrier, I'm really just putting more work on myself. But in reality, if you want buy-in and clarity within an organization that ultimately leads to commitment, accountability, and results, you have to do the hard work of getting people involved in the process and allowing their voices to be heard. The challenge is you have to navigate through the complexities of, once people have their voices heard, it's like, okay, now use my suggestion. And maybe you're fielding 500 different suggestions, right? And the reality is you can't use everybody. But I think by and large, people feel that they have buy-in and that they have clarity when they're asked to be part of the process. They're brought along in it. And then the final product, right, isn't a final at all. It's communicated effectively and then embedded across the culture and then continues to be nurtured over time. So a lot of times people see strategy as that, write it, perfunctory, put it on the shelf, do it with a small group of senior team members. And the reality is, that's just not the way strategy works, not when it's effective.
Yeah, I think that's so important. And I love that you put more work on yourself to really implement this idea of a human-centered approach. And now you're able to learn from your experience to really have those voices at the table. What are some of the key things that you see should be included in a strategy and to effectively carry it out?
Yeah, some of it is pretty obvious. Of course, you need your core values and your purpose, which is your why. If you're not in the loop on those two things, Brené Brown does a lot of work around core values and Dare to Lead. Simon Sinek is the go-to for understanding your why. Those form the foundation of everything that you do. And then from there, your mission builds on top of that. And the mission can be changing over time, whereas the core values and purpose stay constant in many respects. And then you have your aspirational vision and your big goal that you're working towards, right? What is that kind of key indicator that's going to show that you've moved the needle in meaningful ways towards that mission and that impact that you're aiming for? Underneath all of that are your strategy platforms and the things that you need to address strategically in the coming years to drive all of that forward. And so you've got to consider things like people investments, your governance structure, your nonprofit, your service delivery and your programming, and then what your marketing and comms and fund development is going to look like. And all of those pieces together wrapped up in a bow create a really nice strategy.
And something that you talked about earlier, like revenue generation, because, and I want to talk a little bit more about that in terms of how it comes to strategic plan and forecasting 3 to 5 years, you have to build in that growth. But where can organizations have conversations that invite people in to help them with that growth and some of the infrastructure that comes with it?
Yeah, I think that a lot of organizations make the mistake. And I was talking to a leader probably 2 years ago, but it still sticks with me. And he was so excited because he was like, hey, I'm going to have this big announcement at my annual event where I'm going to release the new strategic plan on them. And he had put tons and tons of time into this strategy and was super pumped about it. And I'm sure it was a solid strategy. There's no question about it. But I asked, how many people have you had involved in the process? And his answer was zero. And so to come to a big meeting with your funders, for example, and to say, hey, here's our strategy, boom, like it or not, you just have to hope that they say, oh, that syncs up exactly with what we're hoping to accomplish and we want to see the connections ourselves. But if you include them all along the way early in the process and you work together to form those connective tissues all throughout, the engagement is so much higher. And that's why, Haley, you and I are both, I'm no longer in the fund development business, but I have been for a long time. It always used to irk me a little bit when nonprofits would come and say, hey, I want you to do our fund development. And then the next question would be, but do you have a strategy? And they would say, no, why would we need a strategy? Then you don't have a plan for fund development, right? It's not a chicken or an egg situation. One comes before the other.
Yeah, I definitely think that's true. And I was just writing on my LinkedIn a post today about how along the lines of fund development and having strategy as it pertains to the board. So I've been sat on 5 boards over my last 12 years of my nonprofit career, and I've only been onboarded properly by one organization where they've checked in with me to see like where my strengths are, how they align. Not only, these are mostly membership organizations, they're not specifically around fundraising, but even nonprofits that I've sat on, they don't have fundraising plans or fund development plans, and then they expect their board members to fundraise. But there's no clear direction on how the board members' strengths can play into whatever the plan is. And so how do you coach leaders to really, because board fundraising is always one of those like frustration pain points that we all have. I know, I've been there. But like, how do you coach leaders to really solidify that plan and guide board members in a way that they can really become engaged?
And you're right. This is a pain point across many nonprofits. I don't think board members are very different than the staff that are doing the actual work, right? You're asking them to be brand ambassadors, to go out and communicate your message, amplify it, bring in additional resources to your organization. If they are not brought along in the process effectively, from onboarding to right throughout the strategy process, being asked for their opinion, their input, their pushback, their criticisms, et cetera, they're not really going to feel connected to the work that you're trying to do or to achieve. Now, they might still love the mission. And you got a lot. Board members were like, I'm fired up about the mission. I love what they do. But then they're not connected into the everyday of what they're really doing from a strategic perspective. And so it ends there. They're like cheering the mission, but they don't have anything that they can use to go out and actually be a true ambassador of the strategy. And I think you've got to equip board members properly throughout that planning process to make sure that they're ready to go out and be your champion.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. And it's an ongoing process. It's not just like a one and done. They join the board, they get trained, and then they're like sent to go fly and do the work. I think it's an ongoing process. So at LeadStar, you mostly do team trainings, right? Do you train teams or individuals?
Yeah, both. We like to say we coach teams because in our work with organizations, we find it to be far more effective and impactful all around when we're able to work with teams of leaders in a really synergistic way.
So are they leaders at the same nonprofit or are they different leaders and then they get to join in a community of people?
Yeah, so it can look very different depending on the organization or the industry. But what I think has been interesting about our work in the nonprofit sector specifically is there an increasing number of funders who want to fund capacity building in nonprofits because they're recognizing much of what we're talking about. We credit the private sector with all of these things and we give them the training to do it, strategy and marketing and comms and sales. And then we say to the nonprofit sector, hey, good luck, guys, figure it out. But in reality, these things need to be taught, right? These aren't just skills that you randomly acquire. You have to learn them. And so I think funders are, I don't want to speak for all funders, but many of the funders I'm speaking with want to invest in capacity building initiatives. And so what we're doing at LeadStar most often with the nonprofit sector is bringing together leaders from various nonprofits and putting them in a cohort where they're each receiving individual coaching support. But then there's also these synergistic workshop days where we're teaching some of these core concepts, things like how do you create a strategy? And then typically the intermediary is serving as like a backbone behind that support. Now, yeah. In instances where a nonprofit is large enough and they do have that infrastructure to coach teams, we'd love to fully integrate.
Yeah, I think that's so important. And for those listening, yes, funders, even here in Orange County, are willing to have those conversations and realize the people do the work. And so you have to invest in the people to be able to carry out the mission. And I think there are some organizations here in Orange County that have done that really well with funders. And I actually had one on my podcast talk about that from Groundswell, talking about how she saw a need for her organization to raise the base salary so that people could afford to live here, and also allowing their team to have a 5-week sabbatical because that actually improves productivity, and they've done the research and they've seen it. And so having those conversations with funders about how to come in and fund the gap or fund whatever is needed, viewing it as an opportunity for growth and for further investment in the community, which is what they're mission is delivering on anyways.
Yeah. And I think that's an increasing trend. You talked about futurism and where the nonprofit industry is going. You can start to see the shift in the funder community, the newer age philanthropists who have a lot more trust in the organizations and say, hey, we want to give you this money. We don't want to earmark it for a specific program because we know in reality, that's not how things always work. We want to cover some of that overhead. And some of that might include treating people fairly, right? Giving them better wages or investing in their learning and development, right? Things that we take for granted in the private sector that don't always come in the public sector.
Have you seen, I know overhead is like not always, we have too much overhead or there has to be a certain percentage. I've sat on grant committees where they're like, this organization has too much overhead. And as a fundraiser, I have to educate them because a lot of them don't have experience with nonprofits. They're just people who want to give back and do good. So I have to educate them on this concept of overhead. So have you seen that trend of the overhead myth going away, or are people still concerned about it?
Again, I haven't been spending as much time in the fundraising space as I had in the past, but I think there are some new philanthropists like Mackenzie, and I'm blanking on her last name, of Amazon fame, who's taking a lead role in this sector in saying, hey, here's a gift, a significant sized gift. And really, we want you to tell us what the outcome should be for it. And we're cool with however you want to spend the money. And I think that is, in general, a recognition that nonprofits can't run if the only thing that is being supported is the program. Right? It's actually not possible because they still have to have some administration to make those programs happen. And to your point, educating the funders is one step, but it would be exciting to see the philanthropic community to shift as a whole in that direction.
Yeah. And I think there's pros and cons to the way that Mackenzie Scott. approaches funding. But I think shifting more towards, I've been a grant writer and there's so much time an investment that goes into writing a grant and we don't account for it in the budget. And so more of that free funding where there's not as many barriers to approach to funding should be the way of the future. Because especially for grassroots organizations, they are higher infrastructure because they're just starting out or they have a limited amount of people. So I think, yeah, that way of funding hopefully will be a trend in the future.
But I think it ties back into your comments right at the beginning around innovation, right? Because we don't want to sit on our hands ever and wait for something that we can't control to happen. As leaders, we want to look what is within our control. And that's where I think I've seen some really cutting edge nonprofits say, hey, we're going to create our own business line that mimics the for-profit sector, and we're going to generate revenue on our own. And then that's going to become sustaining. And there's no restrictions, right? It's relatively unlimited or unrestricted monies. And that gives you some more freedom and flexibility than when those restricted program dollars come in and fill those holes.
Yeah. I think that's so important. Is there anything like specifically that you see when you bring a team of leaders together from different nonprofits? Are there certain trends that you're seeing, whether they're challenges or like trends that they are coming across that are relative to all of those leaders?
Yeah, at first, leadership is leadership, and it just doesn't matter where you're leading, right? The challenges of inspiring others and influencing outcomes are the challenges. But of course, they look different depending on the environment that you're leading in. So some of the kind of core themes show up in anything, anywhere we go. Things like accountability and consistency and credibility and being in service to others and confidence, right? Those are some of the kind of core themes. Acting with intent. So getting to this idea of strategy and forward thinking. That cuts across every single leader. But then when you get into the nonprofit sector, I would say that there are some of those, whether they're hard skills or technical skills that we want to describe them as, some of the things like, how do I actually write a strategy? What does that look like? What's the final product? How do I effectively engage in marketing and communications? What does it look like to be a storyteller on behalf of my organization? How do I avoid mission creep in my programs and make sure that I'm staying focused in the services that I'm delivering? And then just other capability conversations. That tends to be a bit more unique to the nonprofit sector.
Yeah, and I think that's so important that you bring that up, because if someone's listening and they're a nonprofit leader, know that you are not alone and that there are people out there that want to support you and cheer you on, like Lead Star. And Kristen, who will help guide you in the right direction. But just, I think leadership can feel so lonely sometimes, and there are opportunities that are affordable to invest in yourself. And I think professional development is such a key way to not only lead yourself and learn, but also learn how to lead an organization. And I believe that it starts with you as a leader.
Absolutely. And leadership can feel incredibly lonely, but there are a lot of universals in leading, right? We all tend to experience similar things. We just don't always talk about it. We don't talk about it openly. And then it becomes such an isolating experience. And I think coaching, just as an example, is a way to bring that out and make it not isolating anymore.
Yeah, because hopefully by talking about it, it reduces burnout and reduces, because isolation is a sign of burnout and it can also lead to burnout. And so I think being able to coach and have someone where you can divulge information to in a confidential and safe place is so important as part of leadership.
Yeah, that when I mentioned that organization I was a part of at the beginning of my career that invested so fully in my development, one of the biggest things and the greatest gifts they gave to me was a coach that I could access anytime I needed it. And I probably accessed it way too much. But the reality was I was burning out and I didn't know what I was doing and I needed help and I didn't know who to lean on. And that coach became my go-to. And I was in the nonprofit sector as well at the time. So I think it's a myth if we think that development and learning is reserved for the private sector. It's not.
Yeah. And I think this is why I love having these conversations, because hopefully someone feels a little less alone and I can give voice to nonprofit leaders, both on the consultant and actual leadership side, to share stories and be able to build this community of support for each other.
Absolutely. You are not alone.
Yes. Well, thank you so much, Kristen, for having this conversation with me. I have learned so much from you and have just, it's been a joy to know you and just learn from you. And so where can people follow along with you and the work that you do?
Yeah, I would love if you connect with me on LinkedIn, Kristin, K-R-I-S-T-I-N, Harrington, or check us out at star.us. Love to connect with you and talk more. Thanks so much, Haley. It's been a pleasure.
If you have valued these stories or learned something from what you've heard, please share this podcast episode or follow me on LinkedIn. Thank you so much for your support, and together we can build a better community and world.